feminism, pornography, and female desire from Kishore Chandiramani. I was speaking with a female acquaintance over the phone and said to her that, in my opinion, men were more afflicted with sexual desire compared to women. To which she replied instantly, "But that's not true. Who told you that?" I was taken aback by her reaction, but responded by saying that in my experience of growing up in India, I had noticed that most of my female relatives who had lost their spouses in their middle age chose not to remarry. But the majority of the middle-aged widowed men got married again. Secondly, I had also noticed that men were more into watching pornography compared to women. And that's why I concluded that men were more focused on sex, whereas women were more into seeking gratification through relationships. After reading feminist literature, I found an answer that can partially explain this difference. That the socio-cultural factors encourage women to suppress their desire. Simone de Beauvoir, a French philosopher, had said that women were not biologically different from men, but were made to believe so as a result of the oppressive socio-cultural factors. According to her, the psychological differences between men and women had no biological basis, and that they were purely of cultural and social origin. Although difficult to prove scientifically, but it does seem to me that there are many genuine psychological factors which are in the default settings of the two genders, and they may not be socially learnt. In real life, for most women, sex should happen within a social context, and the act should not be divorced from it. The same preference goes for their choice of pornography as well. The sexual activity happening within a storyline or a film holds greater attraction to them than this happening completely cut off from its social context. Now, moving on to the pornography for women. The porn made for and by women is different from the conventional porn, which has rightly been described as degrading to women. The porn for women has such scenes or dialogues as, "There is no life without you. I've left everything behind, my family, my home, and my country for you." And a man showing that he really cares about the woman above everything else. The porn for women is not as visual and graphic as that for men. The audience want things to be left to their imagination rather than putting everything out in visual details. Maybe because their imagination is richer and more romantic than what the film director is able to capture in the camera. Also, there should be romantic music playing in the background. Better if it is a famous romantic song known to them. The images of lying next to each other and waking up in the morning with the man rather than just having sex with him holds a greater appeal. In the porn films made by and for women, one sees things in slow motion, less of rough sex, men being gentle and kind, women being in control, but not in the way of being a dominatrix, which is perhaps the unconscious wish of a man who is domineering in his daily life, to be dominated. Another difference is that while men are willing to pay for sex, very few women would be willing to do so. This indicates the difference in gender psychology. One can argue that this is also culturally learnt, but a careful examination of the world history across cultures may not support that assertion. Agreeing to have sex means a woman is giving away something very precious to her, and the man, once having received sex, feels the need to do something in return, as if he has received something special. There may be a biological basis to it, as she has only one egg, and it should be given to that special man, whereas a man has millions of sperms, and it does not hold much value to him. Men, when having an extramarital affair, are not careful about the social status of the female and don't particularly look for a woman of their age, whereas women are very cautious about the age of the man and his social status. Although in modern times we occasionally do come across women who want to have toy boys, and Lady Chatterley's lover was a gardener, not of equal status. During sexual activity, men are more visually oriented, wanting to see things, whereas women are more tactile, auditory, and olfactory. During orgasm, a man keeps his eyes open, whereas a woman closes hers. A man feels more connected with the woman before having orgasm, whereas a woman feels more connected after achieving an orgasm. I don't know whether these differences can be explained on the cultural and social basis. A man can still have sex with a woman even if he is angry with her, but it's not possible for a woman to do that. As if, for a man, the sexual activity compensates for the wrong that the woman has done to him, and his anger gets neutralized after sex. Whereas, for a woman, having sex with a man who hasn't been kind to her is like someone rubbing salt in her wounds. Even the psychosexual disorders are different in the two genders. Under stress, women normally suffer from a reduced sexual desire as well as the arousal, and anorgasmia, that is, inability to achieve orgasm, is also more common in women compared to men. It may also be that high prolactin, a female hormone, levels leads to a reduced sexual desire seen in women, making them more vulnerable to having desire problems. For men, the common sexual disorders seen during stress periods are premature ejaculation and erection problems, and not a loss of desire. Can these be culturally determined? Perhaps they can, but with a stretch of imagination. According to one study examining the emotional responses, attentional capture, and sexual stimulation in women with or without hypoactive sexual desire disorder, which means reduced sexual desire, women with reduced sexual desire did not appear to have a negative association to sexual stimulation, but rather a weaker positive association than women without sexual desire problems, which means low sexual desire in women was not related to a dislike or hatred for sex. The sexual aversion disorder is also more common among women, and one can successfully argue that this could be culturally determined. Next, feminism and porn. If women are not coming out and claiming their place in the marketplace to create porn films, write erotic novels and poems, and run clubs that are geared towards satisfaction of female desire, it is blamed on men. There may be some justification there, as no decent or respectable person who is highly placed in society will do that, and there is no legal sanction for that as well. As a result, such activities and the porn industry has become the preserve of people who are not law-abiding and a no-go area for most women. Now moving on to the feminism, the four waves of feminism. The first and the second waves of feminism, apart from taking up a number of other feminist views, took a strong anti-porn view, both at the personal and the political levels. The third wave debate has focused less on the political implications of pornographic representation than on the personal ambivalences to which it gives rise. It falsely suggests that pornography has ceased to be relevant to contemporary feminism at a time when the visual and textual vocabulary of pornography is being speedily absorbed into the West cultural mainstream. Reference Waters M. in Sexing It Up, Women, Pornography and Third Wave Feminism, published 2007. Nina Hartley, herself a porn star and a porn film director, has said that anti-pornography feminism is beset by a major contradiction. In an attempt to speak up for women who have been silenced by pornography, inhibit the speech of these women, or when these women speak, simply deny the truth that they have to narrate their own experiences, these supposed victims of society feel that the second wave feminists don't listen to their stories, their truths. It's a no-go with them. She further says that anti-pornography feminism's well-intentioned eagerness to understand female sex workers as victims has resulted in the disempowerment of women whose experiences don't fit well with this narrow outlook. Most sex workers are not victims. In fact, they are the ones who come out in hordes to protest in front of parliaments wherever anti-prostitution laws are enacted. The feminists would argue that women who have been brainwashed into subordination will not be the best judge on their predicament. However, it does not mean that their subjective experiences, their judgments, their stories, their free will to act out their libertarian values are of no significance. In support of the third wave feminism, Stoller claims, in our quest for sexual satisfaction, we shall have no sex toy unturned and no sexual avenue unexplored. The third wave attempt to make feminism more agreeable to a generation of young women. In support of the third wave feminism, Stoller says that the third wave is an attempt to make feminism more agreeable to a generation of young women who have been fed the myth that feminists are the fat, man-hating, no-fun lesbians. Distinguishing this revamped version of feminism from that of her feminist foremothers, Stoller promises that third wavers, unlike second wavers, don't dare to assume that they know what female sexuality is all about, and are therefore unwilling to make judgments about the appropriateness of its manifestations. Stoller recognizes in the book Sex and the Thinking Girl that feminism has made, and it still needs to make, huge advances in terms of increasing employment opportunities for women. She suggests that we temporarily set aside the problem of gendered income differentials in favor of addressing an orgasm gap that hasn't budged since the days when Donna Reed actually believed in the stereotyped gender roles in the American sitcom Father Knows Best. The third wave remains divided on the issue of pornography. For Keegan Doyle, and Danny Lacombe, anti-porn stance would be depriving women who produce and consume pornography the right to their sexuality. Whereas for McKinnon, if pornography is part of your sexuality, then you have no right to your sexuality. Sulamith Firestone wrote in The Dialectic of Sex, The Case of Feminist Revolution, "The end goal of feminist revolution must be, unlike that of the first feminist movement, not just the elimination of male privilege, but of the sex distinction itself. Genital differences between human beings would no longer matter culturally." The fourth wave feminism also argues for equal opportunities for the boys and men as well to overcome gender norms, that is, being more involved in childcare and household duties, ability to express emotions and feelings, achieving a greater linguistic proficiency, etc. Curing porn and sex addiction with pornography. Just as addiction to internet can be cured with the help of internet, a software virus can be eliminated by another antivirus software program. The perils of artificial intelligence can also be solved by artificial intelligence. In the same way, addiction to pornography and sex can also be cured through pornography. The pornography in its present incarnation only focuses on the apparently attractive side of sexual experience, thereby not allowing individuals to experience it in its totality. It should be possible for psychotherapists and sex educators to create pornographic material that will address the issue of sexual addictions, wherein they can start depicting the less attractive side of sexual activity, the messiness, the unattractiveness of the activity, faces without makeup, the troubled and inadequate minds that get addicted to sex, the loss of inner peace and conflicts that result from sexual excesses, the troubled real-life stories of porn actors, the illnesses they suffer from, the loneliness and sadness in their lives, the instability in their relationship and inability to lead a normal life, etc., can also be weaved into the porn films that can be used for therapy. The last sentence in the film Elfie, Michael Caine as a lead actor in the first and Jude Law in the second, says, "In the pursuit of happiness and sexual satisfaction, I have achieved a lot, but I have lost my inner peace in the process." The Western societies place too much emphasis on keeping one's sex life alive for as long as possible, and the desirability of having sex till the time you die, and it places undue emphasis on keeping one's sexual side alive. We see the contrary happening in the spiritual, moral, and social values in the Eastern countries. In some sections of Eastern society, the purpose of marriage is not seen as enjoying carnal bliss endlessly till the day you die, but a gradual maturation and progression out of sexual activity, so that one can engage in more mature ways of connecting with one's spouse, a sort of companionship, harmony that fosters inner peace. Without marriage, this job would be difficult, as one is constantly engaged in adjusting and readjusting to different relationships, and the gaps in between relationships can make it difficult for one to adopt a healthy attitude towards sexual gratification. This will stop individuals from progressing higher up in the Maslow's hierarchy of the basic human needs and actualizing oneself. Just as with alcohol addictions, it will be difficult for the addict to move from addiction to controlled drinking and abstinence if one does not follow a clear process of detoxification and rehabilitation, and then move on to controlled drinking. Applying the same logic to sex in marriage, one can see that marriage first introduces the individual to the intoxication of the romantic and sexual gratifications, and if one remains committed in relationship, to gradually move them on to a process of detoxification and therapy, to a controlled gratification of one's romantic desires, and eventually transcending it. Some have argued that porn, instead of distorting social values and reality, is a representation of a social reality. But other theorists argue that, in that case, pornography is no less an act than the rape and torture it represents. Many ancient agricultural societies around the world were matriarchal in nature, although some authors such as Cynthia Eller have disagreed. According to them, it was only during the industrialization that men started to work in factories and offices, and they acquired a greater power and control over money, and women were pushed into the domestic roles of unpaid labor. There's no reason the patriarchal nature of our current society can't be changed. In fact, it has started to happen. The leadership roles that women have assumed in society in making valuable contributions in the advancement of society is still not seen in porn industry, partly because of the stigmatization of this whole industry by the mainstream society and the media. A greater integration of this shadow side of the society into the persona of our society will enable women to assume more leadership roles in defining what pornography is, what it does, what it should do, and how it should be shaped for future generations, and how it should reflect the aspirations of the future generations. Thank you. This recording was brought to you from the Nature Consultancy based at the Emotions Clinic Education and Training Center in Stoke-on-Trent, England. Thank you.